Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is your partner in success, Denise Griffiths. I am an online entrepreneur and a virtual assistance industry expert, and I want to welcome you to the Online Entrepreneur Audio Interview Series. I have created this series to provide you with practical guidance from other very successful entrepreneurs who will teach you to how they have built and grown their own online businesses. My intention for this series is to empower you to achieve your dreams and live a successful and accomplished life. Today, I am going to be joined by Tracy Pei. We are having trouble getting her on the line, so you may hear me chatting a little bit more than normal, and I will try to get her on the line here again in just a second. Tracy, are you there? Maybe not. We will try again. Anyway, Tracy Pei is known as Miss Organized. She has been organizing spaces professionally into livable and lovable environments for about 5.5 years, and she's done it for the pure joy of it since she was a child for about 25 years. She also integrates the power of feng shui into her services, which results in powerful positive changes for her clients. Tracy is a single mom. She has a 6-year-old daughter named Paris, and they were both cast for the show Must Love Kids on TLC, I believe it was, which premiered this last summer. So Tracy's mission is to empower parents and their children with lifelong organizing skills so that a higher quality of life can be maintained. And she has also translated this now into helping businesses and online entrepreneurs do the same thing. So let's see if we can get Tracy on the line. Tracy, are you there? Tracy? We are really having trouble with this radio show today. I'm not entirely sure why, but we will keep trying. Tracy, can you hear me? Well, I am so sorry. We are trying everything that we can, and it's just not working. We may have to reschedule this, and I hate to do that. Tracy, are you on the line?
I'm here, Denise. Can you hear me?
Hi. Can now.
Oh, wow. Good. Yay.
I have no idea what is going on with this.
Yeah,
thing,
that was
but,
really
you know,
strange.
Yeah, I'm just chatting away saying, I know she's there. I can feel her out there.
I'm like, Denise, I'm here. I'm here.
Well, thank you so much.
I'm here.
I knew you were. Thank you so much for being here, being so patient with our technical issues, but we got past it. So
yeah.
I'm glad that you're here because I know that today we're going to be talking about, in particular, online entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of us. There are a lot of us, and we're popping up more and more, you know, by the day as the economy kind of goes south in some sectors. And, you know, people are not just hanging around saying, well, I better go to the unemployment office. They are actually seizing the moment saying, you know, this is a real good time for me to do what I've always wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And God bless them all. Oh, I'm so proud of some. And people call and say, you know, I'm not going to even look for a job. I'm going to be me.
Yeah.
Good for you. So you're here to help them today, aren't you?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Good. Because I'll tell you, when you're first starting, there's so many things that are overwhelming. If you have lost your job, or if you have quit your job, or if just for some reason you're no longer willing to go back into that kind of environment, there are a lot of things that have to take place, and first and foremost in my mind, and this goes before the business plan, I'll be honest with you, because
mm-hmm.
I'm a clean freak. Clean your space.
Yes,
get
absolutely.
Your space organized. Get rid of the clutter. You know, throw out the old shoe boxes and get a shredder, for crying out loud. So, Tracy, I know we've got a lot to cover, but
yes.
I also know that you taught a class recently where you spent about 30 minutes just on the emotional aspects of clutter.
Right.
And how it manifests itself. So share.
Yes, I will share. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me back, by the way.
I love having you back. We get the best feedback from when you're on the show.
Oh, that's awesome. That's just going to make my day. Thank you.
There you go.
I taught a class about a week ago, and, you know, I had my little outline of what I was going to teach, and, you know, the first part of that is I wanted to address the emotional aspect of clutter, and I only intended to spend about 10 minutes, but as I started talking, the more that came out of my mouth, I was just looking at the expression on these women's faces, and they were just, their eyes were just huge, and they were so fascinated with what I was saying, and you could just hear a lot of the, oh,
Did you love those moments, those light bulb moments?
Oh, totally. It was a total connection moment, and I was just thinking, well, you know, I think there's really something here, and whatever it is that's coming out of my mouth, these women need to hear more of it. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, I got a call the very next morning from a lady who just couldn't thank me enough for what I had taught. And she said, you know, I wrote everything down that you said, and just so much that you said really hit home with me. And I even told my husband about it. I told my friend about it. And so, of course, I'm just gloating as she's talking about all this stuff. So, you know, I felt that I wanted to address that with your listeners, the emotional aspects of clutter, because this is really, really what it comes down to with clutter, is it's an emotional issue. It's an internal issue. And what we can really say, if you could put these words in your mind, it will really hopefully help drive this home. What it really comes down to is an emotional impoverishment. And there's a connection between, if something's not right in your inner world, then it's going to manifest in your outer world. And what I really say is that your clutter, what your clutter really is your feelings expressed. It's your feelings. You look around you, and it's communicating to you what's going on in your inside world. But a lot of times it's unconscious. And it's also communicating to everybody else that something's kind of amiss in your world.
I think other people pick on it far quicker than you do, because they walk in and they see a mess and they look at you and go, what's going on?
Right, right, exactly.
Well, they don't say it, they think it. Unless they're a really good friend, then they say it.
Right.
But I know what you're talking about. I've seen it, and you just wonder, what in the heck is the problem?
What is going on, right? Yeah. And you know what? And maybe the people, they know on some level, but they're not willing to acknowledge it. They're not willing to address that there's even something wrong in the first place. And, you know, what's interesting is there was actually a study done by a doctor. His name is Randy Frost. He's a psychologist. Back in the 1990s. And he was the one who discovered that clutter behavior actually comes from a state of emotional impoverishment. And his studies also revealed that when cluttering occurs outside of, you know, psychiatric conditions like OCD, what it's related to is actual emotional deprivation and a lack of warmth expressed in the family, especially during adolescence. And really what it all comes down to is fear.
Oh,
it's clutter, a lot of times, is a fear-based condition. And
then if you add that to economy fears or job fears, that's got to compound and make things worse.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. And it just shows up in so many different ways. You know, your clutter is really communicating a lot of different things. First of all, let's talk about the fact that how it relates to business. That a lot of times your clutter, again, as your feelings expressed, it gets in the way of your ability to be able to be as successful as you most possibly could be in your business. And like you talked about at the beginning, that, yes, business plans are important and getting your financial backing, whatever, all that stuff is very important. But what a lot of entrepreneurs don't realize is that if you have an unstable environment, which is you don't have systems in place and you have clutter, it is going to translate into it's going to block your ability to be successful in your business. And what's going on behind the scenes is that you probably have, on some level, some sort of success-blocking belief. Would you like me to share a few of them?
I would love for you to, because I had not heard that. My jaw just dropped, so please share.
Okay, and then I'll give you a story.
I'll
share with you a story where I was actually able to uncover somebody's unconscious beliefs that relate to what we're talking about. But here's just a few of them. I'm not good enough. I don't deserve success. I don't know enough. I can't do it. I'm a victim in some sort of way. Let's be more specific about the I can't do it.
Now, I hear that a lot, I can't do it. And I have to tell you, that is a word that is banned in my home.
Oh, is that right?
We do not. There are two words that I just flat don't use, and I don't like to hear them. One is if, and the other one is can't.
Oh.
Now, I substitute if for when, and I substitute can't with won't. And, you know, I can be bloody-minded, say I won't do it, but I never say I can't do it.
Right. That's,
so,
that's very powerful
I'd love for
that
you
you're
to address
that.
Oh, I'd love to hear you address that, because that to me is the most debilitating word in the world. I hate that word.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough word. And, you know, there's actually a way to still kind of, you know, communicate your insecurity about your what you feel is your inability to actually perform what it is that's being expected of you. But there's a way that you can actually say it that's a lot more empowering. I actually do the same thing with myself, and I teach that also to my daughter, that, you know, instead of saying, I can't do it, you could say, you know, instead of just going from, like, I can't do it, which is very disempowering, and then all of a sudden mm-hmm. switching it to I can do it, which to the mind's going to go, well, that's a bunch of BS, because, you know, half a second ago I was saying I can't do it, and now all of a sudden you're telling me I can. So on an unconscious level, your brain's going to go, uh-huh, right. So if you can just take just one tiny little step up from I can't do it, then you're moving yourself closer to actually believing that you can. So one, we're kind of getting off subject about clutter, but I think we should address this little thought here, is that, you know, instead of saying, I can't do it, maybe you could use a more empowering language and just say, I don't have the skills and knowledge to perform this at the best of my ability right now, but I'm going to learn what it takes to be able to perform this in a way that I feel that I know I can do this.
That's,
you know,
perfect.
And it's not, you're still not saying, yes, 100% I could do it, but at least you're moving yourself closer to being able to do it. Does that make sense?
Exactly. Oh, perfect,
yeah.
Sense, yes.
So now what I had was with a particular client, and I don't know if I can't do it, it specifically addresses what was going through her mind, but this is just a way to show how our clutter beliefs actually, our beliefs are creating clutter, and it's actually blocking our way of success. She had a desk environment, and it was a pretty small desk, actually, but it had a hutch to it. And she had 20 years worth of stuff crammed in this area. I'm not kidding, 20 years worth of stuff in here. And when I first came in...
I'm literally cringing.
I know, huh? when I told her, I said, you know what? It's probably going to take about 40 hours to get through this stuff. And she looked at me like I was nuts. And her first thought that came up for her was like, oh, well, she's totally overcharging me. She just wants to make money off of me, right? She didn't say this to me, but this is what's going on in her mind. And then she realized I was actually doing it for free because I had worked with her to say, you know, hey, if I organize your space for you, I want you to see the quality of my work, and then maybe you'll feel comfortable promoting me to your listeners and, you know, people you interact with. So let's do a trade. She's like, absolutely. So, you know, again, she thought, oh, she's just overcharging me. And then when she realized that I was doing this for free, she's like, oh, okay. All right, that's just my own stuff coming up. But what happened was, she's a stay-home mom. She opened up this business, and the business just took off. It went faster than she ever imagined that it would. Before she started the business, her whole intention was to be fully available for her children. Well, what wound up happening was, because the business took off and because she was the only one doing it, her time with her children started becoming less and less and less. Mm-hmm. So what happened was, is her desk became more and more and more cluttered. And as she was talking, I was just getting this information on some sort of, like, I don't know, psychic level or whatever you want to call it. I just was getting from her that what she was really doing is she was sabotaging herself. She was just making her work environment less and less and less desirable to force her, to set her up to fail, to put her into a position.
So she could spend more time with her children?
Yes, because she felt guilty.
Oh,
she felt guilty. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah.
Look, women are nuts. I mean, let's just say we are,
you know. The men are right. We are crazy.
We carry way too much on our shoulders. We really do. We overthink everything. But yeah.
Everything.
What a great story. So how did you help her with this? I'm dying to know.
Well, what I did is I brought it to her awareness. And that is really the first step when it comes to getting organized. Is there's two things that have to happen. One, you have to acknowledge that there's a problem. You know, just like an alcoholic, you know, an alcoholic has to acknowledge that there's even a problem in the first place before healing can begin. You have to acknowledge that there's a problem, and you have to be willing to accept it and do something about it. So you have to bring an awareness to it. So when she's talking, I said, you know, I just can't help but feel that you're sabotaging yourself, and let me tell you why. And I said it to her, and her eyes got really big, and she's like, you just hit the nail on the head. You just absolutely hit the nail on the head. So now once we did that, and she was able to accept that, there was something about the acceptance portion of it that she just started getting rid of stuff like you wouldn't believe. She was practically calling me on a daily basis because I got her process started, and then she just continued to declutter on her own. She'd call me almost every day. You will not believe this. You will not believe how much I've gotten rid of. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And so she just keeps telling me now, my place just looks, it's showroom quality. My desk is showroom quality.
There's something so cathartic about clearing out all that junk.
Oh, completely. Yeah. And
I love nothing better
than
a good bonfire. When I get too much stuff cluttered, I don't even bother to shred it. I go out and burn it. It's very cathartic.
Yeah, it really
is. And I live
in
the country, so I can get by with that. It's a lot of fun.
it is a lot of fun. And there's just, it's really amazing. My clients always, when they're going through this process, uncover stuff within themselves, their beliefs, that they just didn't even know that were there. So I'll share with you also how these beliefs are also showing up. Aside from the messages that you're giving to yourself, there's also ways that they show up in your behavior. You want to hear those?
Yeah, I do. Can I ask a specific question about that?
Of course.
Is this behavior towards your clients or towards your business? And I mean, I know that she was kind of sabotaging herself so she could spend time with her family, and I totally get that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm finding with some, I mentor a lot of entrepreneurs, budding entrepreneurs, and they literally shoot themselves in the foot, and they do it by treating their clients in an odd kind of a fashion. Are you seeing that? You know, they're just so, they're so afraid of growing. They're so afraid of maybe failure, perhaps, that they will literally just turn some clients aside. And I don't understand that. And I'm wondering if that's part of the clutter, because they'll say, well, I'm just not ready. I'm just not organized. I'm in this growth thing, and I'm just not ready. And the panic is just palpable.
Right.
So I'm wondering if it's a clutter issue.
What I'm actually seeing that happens, keep in mind, a good majority of my clients are women, and what we do with women is we almost typically always put other people above ourselves.
Yes, we do.
It's just the way that it works. Mm-hmm. And what I see that happens is that my clients are bending over backwards to help everybody else, but the person who's suffering the most is them.
Mm-hmm.
So, like this particular lady, she sleeps maybe an average of 4 hours a night. Okay,
oh, I like her. I do that, too.
How can you survive? I would be a monster.
I know. And then I do it in fits and starts. I don't do it all at one time.
Oh, boy.
I know. Not normal.
How does that work out for you, Denise?
It's been working for a long, 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 long time. I've been doing it
right.
I've never slept all night, ever.
Really?
No, never have.
Wow, you've just gotten adjusted to it, I suppose.
I reckon. I didn't know anything different, so this is
all
right.
Oh, that's true. That's very, very true. Well, you know, there's, you know, not to get too far off topic, but there are some people that actually can operate with less sleep, so that's...
No,
that's
if I sleep too much, I'm actually groggy.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Some people are just that way, yeah.
I need 9 hours.
Oh, my husband does, too. He gets really crabby. We won't talk about that. But how does she cope? I mean, I know... How do people cope when they're just, I mean, even your sleep gets cluttered, honestly. Have you noticed that? Because people will take these issues, these problems to bed with them in the middle of the night. They wake up and go, yeah, and I keep a journal for this because my mind is always working, and I keep a journal on the side of my bed,
and it's
a pink one. But it's, I'm constantly writing things down. So how do they declutter their mind so they can rest?
Well, a lot of them don't.
Oh,
a lot of them don't. But what I find, though, is that, what I find is that if we start the process with actually decluttering their environment, it actually does help their mind to be a little bit more at rest. Because here's the thing, especially with women, that we are programmed, the way that our mind works as women, is we are programmed to see all the details. Okay, so we see what's going on in our left. We've got eyes in the back of our head. You know, we take in our entire environment. Whereas men, they are more focused. So they don't quite see the tissue that's laying on the ground that has the snot in it that our little 6-year-old blew and left on the ground. They don't see that, but we do. And it sits in the back of our mind. It's like, oh, I got to take care of that. So the more that you have in your line of vision or in your environment that's just constantly sending messages back to your brain saying, I got to take care of that. That's just like having like 5 loads of laundry in front of you and just like, I have to take care of this.
It's a distraction.
Totally.
Do you think it's a distraction mechanism that we set up so we can't be successful?
100%.
In some cases?
Absolutely. 100%. And I'll tell you how this shows up, all this cluttered belief system, how it actually shows up in our world and how it can actually get in the way of our success. So a couple of the ways that it shows up as far as like who we are in the world and how we show up and how we manage our situations and our behavior, one of them could be perfectionism. That's a big one. Yep,
I don't have emotional clutter, I promise. I am a perfectionist. No. I'm a recovering perfectionist. Let me clarify.
That's a good one.
I wish you hadn't said that. I would think depression would be one of them.
Yeah, that's the other one. You've got perfectionism. You have depression. In fact, with the depression, depression creates this lack of energy, lack of motivation, and it's kind of a vicious cycle, too, because if you're depressed, you don't have the motivation or energy to declutter, and then your environment gets more cluttered, which creates more depression.
Right.
And, actually, there was a survey conducted by Clutterless Recovery Groups, which revealed that 24% of clutterers consider themselves to be depressed, and 46% of them have been in therapy.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
I did not know that. That is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
That's scary.
The depression
That's
is a big one.
Fascinating. I would think that it would be because, I mean, once your environment is so chaotic and so out of control, you would almost want to avoid it, I would think.
Completely. Yeah. And again, and I'll go into, once I share with you a few more of these ways that they show up, I'll go into, actually what your behavior is actually doing in your environment, and you'll see how these depressions and perfectionism actually show up. Another one is resistance to change, the rebel.
Mm.
So if you have somebody who has rebellious tendencies, I don't know anybody like that besides myself.
I don't either. We need an intervention, I'm telling you right now.
telling you. Sometimes I'm a rebel without a cause, and I'm just like, why are you being rebellious? And I guess the only thing I could say to myself is because I can.
This is fun.
Because I want
it
to.
It feels good.
Right. But it actually, if we're talking about clutter, what actually happens is if you have somebody who's a rebel and has resistance to change, what's going on in their language is they're saying this to themselves: you can't make me do it, so I don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a situation, and I've experienced this before, where I had a client who was an architect / lawyer. Can you imagine that? Architect and lawyer at the same time.
Now that's a perfectionist.
Yeah, that's crazy. And
yeah.
and his
not married,
environment.
Right?
What's that?
Couldn't be married. Would
anybody
be married?
Nope. No, I don't think he was married.
Go.
I think
there
he was married to his stuff because he
there
had a lot of it.
Yeah.
He had a lot of it. But what happens is that in a rebellion situation, if you had a parent who maybe was overly organized and always telling you clean your room or whatever the case might be, they could be growing up and saying, like, you know what, it's my stuff,
mm-hmm.
and I can do with it what I want, and I'm not going to listen to you. So that's another reason why clutter can be started. A really big one, is guilt. That is
what?
One of the ways that your belief systems show up in the form of clutter is because of guilt.
Give me for instance. That's crazy.
Well, it's just kind of weird that sometimes we have an ability to, what is it called, anthropomorphism?
Mm-hmm.
We actually give, like,
Well, that's
objects.
When you're giving objects or cats. A lot of people, that's when people talk about their attachments to their pets. They're giving this feline or a dog human qualities, which just is not
qualities.
The case. I love
exactly.
my pets, but they're not human. So,
exactly.
yeah, you're correct. That's the proper term.
Teddy bears is a really good example. I've caught myself a few times. I actually almost did this to my daughter, I think, last night. Teddy bears in her bed. I almost said to her, because she's been sleeping in my bed lately, and I'm getting a little tired of it. So I almost said to her last night, you need to go sleep in your bed because your bed's starting to miss you. And then I realized, what am I doing? What was I just about ready to do? I was just about ready to give her bed feelings. And so as a child, if you give an object feelings, then of course the child, she's going, well, I don't want to hurt that bed's feelings, and that could translate later on in life to like, well, I can't let that go because then I'd be hurting its feelings. Or better yet, grandma gave you, a teapot from the 1920s. Grandma's no longer alive, but if you threw away that teapot, grandma would be rolling over in her grave. And you can't do that to grandma.
Look, I did that with a car that I had for 15 years. I loved it. I loved my car, and the day that it drove out, I cried. You know, I finally had to give it up. It was just time for a new vehicle, and I didn't. It was the best. I still think it was the best vehicle I ever had. And I'll see it on the road every now and then. And go, ooh, it's pitiful. And I traded it for a Mercedes. I don't know why I'm crying, but I hated my Mercedes for 4 months. It was not my other car.
Wow.
I was really ticked off.
Yeah. And
now,
and
how illogical is that?
It is illogical, but, I mean, obviously, on an unconscious level, you're just like, well, it makes perfect sense. On a conscious level, you're like, well, that's totally illogical. But, you know, your feelings, you're giving your stuff feelings. And the thing is, a lot of people, they have a difficult time letting stuff go because it's like a part of them. And if they let this go, then it's almost like feeling like I'm letting a part of me go. I'll give you a really good example about that. I was talking with a woman who had a ton of books, just a lot of books. And there's people who are really, who are so focused on their education that and personal growth that they just acquire books and CDs and all this. And it just it gives them more power. It makes them feel more powerful. So when I actually started talking to her, I said, let me ask you a question. If we got rid of those books, or even some of those books, what would happen? And I can't remember exactly what she said, but what we boiled it down to is we equated it to books meant power, and if we took away those books, we're taking away her power. And on some level, she would feel stupid. And
wow.
So she has attached, she has made these objects signify who she is. Does that make sense?
It really does. I mean, I have tons and tons. My garage actually has built-in bookshelves. My garage doubles as my library at this point. And I would almost rather lose anything in the house but my books. But I love to read. I mean, it's the one thing that I do that is just, I'm so passionate about that I will not give it up ever. But I've never really equated it to that kind of a thing. That's really interesting.
And it might not be that way for you. That might not be
not.
What your attachment is to it. But, you know, and
we're
going
to have to talk after the show. You might have to
you need
analyze
some therapy.
Me.
You need to get on your couch. Okay.
I need book therapy.
You know, actually, at one point, I was thinking about calling my services clutter release therapy because it really is therapeutic. But, you know, aside from the whole guilty aspect, another thing that you also have is worry and doubt. You know, the common phrase that I hear from people all the time if they get rid of something is, what if I need this someday? Especially when it comes
common?
To paperwork.
Isn't
oh,
that
very
common?
Much so.
Yeah, I threw it away and a week later I needed it. Well, sorry. Yeah.
Well, you know, especially with entrepreneurs, one of the biggest problems that entrepreneurs have is getting rid of paperwork because there's tax implications, right? Oh, my God, if I get rid of this receipt, you know, for a pair of shoes that I bought, whatever, then and
well, it's
and
not only that, but that's what we're taught in the corporate world, too. You file everything. You shred nothing. It's like, oh, no, buy a shredder.
So that's why people, and it's so much information out there, people don't know what to trust. Like, seriously, if you went online and you put in record retention guidelines to find out, like, what would be standard amount of time that you should be holding on to a certain document, you will find 10 different versions of what is acceptable. You could go to one place and say, well, you should hold on to your tax records for 6 years. Another one will say 7 years. Another one will say indefinitely.
Right.
It's just, it's amazing. So, I mean, I think what would really help, I don't know if this will ever happen. Maybe I have to run for Congress to make it happen. But the, Tracy P., the Congress, I can see it now.
I'll vote for anybody who's not an incumbent at this point, but that's another topic.
Then you're saying I have a chance.
You have a chance, honey. You do.
Fantastic. Okay. So what I would love to see is our government to say, you know what, this is how long you have to keep this, and there's no variance on it. There's no, like, you know, read between the lines or, you know, maybe this, maybe that. No, this is the standard that it is. And that just doesn't exist. So a lot of people are just really confused about how long they should keep stuff. So it's understandable that people would have this fear attached to getting rid of their stuff. And they also feel, if I get rid of this, something bad is going to happen. So I'll tell you where a lot of that actually came from is from the Depression in the 1930s. So we had this phenomenon that occurred that even a brown paper bag started costing more money. And so people started become. It actually was a good thing that it happened. It's kind of happening to us right now, where we had to learn to not be just so you know, spending all of our money and just, you know, getting rid of stuff.
We
had to learn how to
everything. Everything is disposable these days. Even cars. You buy a car within 2 or 3 years, it's a rat trap,
yeah,
it seems like.
Right. So people are having to learn to readjust their thinking and thinking of more resourceful ways of how we can actually save something, save some money, save ourselves from having to go and buy it again. And that's a good thing, but could also translate into this mindset of a fear-based mindset. And, of course, if we have our parents grew up in the 1930s and all of a sudden they're experiencing like, okay, we can't get rid of that because if we do, we're not sure we're going to have the money to replace it. So then out of fear but also protection, they pass that mindset on to their kids. They say, you know what, honey, I wouldn't get rid of that if I were you, because if you did, then this is what could happen. And then, of course, that person grows up, and they're thinking, well, my parents told me that because they love me, and they want to protect me, so I'm going to share that with my children too. All while what they're not realizing is this is a very fear-based thinking that may have served its purpose at one point. It was helpful at one point, but now it does not serve its purpose. I'll give you a really good story about that, a little example. You may have heard this before. Have you ever heard the story about the woman who was cooking the ham?
No.
Okay. So there's a story about a woman. She's cooking a ham. She chops off like a quarter piece of the end of the ham, puts it in a pan, cooks it. Daughter says, Mom, why do you cut off the end of the ham like that? And she goes, well, that's how my mother did it. So she goes to her mom. She says, Mom, why do you cut off the quarter of the ham? And she goes, well, that's how my mother did it. So then they went to her mother. Mom, why do you cut off the quarter of the ham? Well, because back in the day, our pans were only so big, so the ham wouldn't actually fit in the pan, so we had to cut off a quarter of the ham in order for it to fit in there. So it had nothing to do with anything but fitting the darn ham in the pan. So,
but, you know, in that... That leads me into, we have a question in the chat room, and the question is, which I think is hilarious, because it leads right into what you're talking about, is clutter genetic? So I'm thinking it's not genetic, but it's habit passed down from mother to daughter, to grandma, you know.
Yeah, it's the nature versus nurture thing, and it's both.
There you go.
It's absolutely both. It's
I love that story.
Isn't that great?
Sorry, just let me chuckle here.
So that's why you have to really question. You know, this is what I teach my clients. In fact, I really drove this home when we were talking at the class the other day. As I said, if you are looking at an object and your first instinct about this object that you've been holding on to is, well, I've got to keep that because, yeah, da, 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 fill in the blank, stop yourself for a second, and all you have to do is say to yourself, now, is that true? Is that true today? Does that make sense today? Yes, it may have made sense. Okay, I needed to hold on to my thesis that I wrote. I actually dealt with a client this the other day. I had to hold on to my thesis for a little while, whatever the need was for that, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's been 25 years.
Oh.
Is there any reason to have to continue to hold on to the thesis or the doctorate or whatever it is that you're talking? You know, so you have to stop and ask the question, does this make sense today? And going back to the question about is it genetic, yes, it's several different things. You could have, there's actually a brain chemistry that actually creates the condition of hoarding. You know, hoarding is where people are actually like, you know, they're holding on to things that just for a long period of time that actually don't have any meaning, any sense to them whatsoever. And
yeah,
that is actually
eight keys. I mean, who needs those?
Right, but in their mind, they feel like they do. And that is actually a brain chemistry issue. You could also have just your wiring. There's just some people who are just hardwired to think more in a structured, organized format, and there's some people that aren't. And that's okay, but you have to be willing to accept, okay, I'm more of the creative type. I don't think linear. I don't think systems. I don't think organization. So what
and
I have to do.
And you're an organizer? Seriously? You amaze me.
No, I'm not saying that about me.
That
about somebody else.
We need to clarify that.
No. I'm saying that because you have people who are just like, I am the creative type. And so I don't think along those lines of like thinking of all the systems, you know what I mean? And so you, if you're honest with yourself about that, then you say, okay, well, then I need help with that. Or I need to develop some sort of a system that works that works with the way that I think. And we'll get into systems in a little bit. But I hope that answers that lady's question. So, you know, just...
Well, she has another question, and I'll get to it in a minute. It's like, well, she says, and I've already answered it, because I'm an educated smart aleck. Let's just call it what it is. The question was, how do I overcome my genetics and become a rebel? And my answer was, fire your parents. So
yeah.
That's probably not the proper answer, is it?
Well, in a sense,
would you address
actually,
her question?
No, you know what? I would actually agree with that.
Oh.
I would actually agree with that. And I'll give you an example of that is, you know, a lot of us grow up under our parents' spell, you know, and just wanting to please our parents and just doing whatever it takes to make them happy. I have a
Until
client.
Until you hit about 14 and then that's all over.
Well, you know, that's the interesting thing, though, is that, you know, you might think that it's over, but on an unconscious level, a lot of us are still dealing with, you know, we want to please our parents. But, of course, we rebel against that, but on some level, we do want to please them. And we don't want to make them mad or whatever the case might be. I actually was working with a client the other day who she was holding on to a lot of clothes that her mom gives her, and she hates them. I mean, as she's pulling these things out, she's like, I hate this outfit. I have never worn this outfit. I hate it. But if my mom came over here and saw that I did not have this anymore, she would actually be mad at me. And I can actually...
That's her mother's issue. It's not her issue.
Totally. But she was taking that on. And I actually said to her, I knew that this would be like, this wasn't anything I was going to cure by a few simple words, but I at least brought the awareness to her. I said, well, you know, maybe you got to let your mom go ahead and be mad.
Or keep your mother out of your closet. How's that? Just say, don't go in there. It's not your business.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And she was actually holding on to it because she was in fear of that her mother would ultimately, again, bottom line, take away the love from her. And that's really
that's
what it comes down
sad.
To.
That is really
sad. Yeah, it is really sad. So how does she get over it? She kind of has to take a stance. And
mm-hmm.
she has to. And it doesn't even have to be a stance, you know, that she actually physically talks to her parents and say, you know, I am taking a stance against you. But she can start doing things for herself to show herself and to communicate to them on some level that, you know what, this is my world, this is my stuff, this is how I choose to handle it. I do not operate in the same way that you do. I do not want to operate in the same way that you do because I'm choosing that that doesn't work for me. And you know what, are they going to pout? Are they going to be mad? Possibly. But so what? It's kind of like with your kid. Right?
Yeah.
You know, are you going to live your life because of their feelings and what you're going to make them feel like? You know, that's a tough existence.
No,
so.
And I can't imagine that her mother would cut her off her Christmas card list for throwing away an outfit. If she does, well, then there's deeper issues.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, very deep issues.
Right. And those are the types of things that, you're going to have a little couch therapy on that one. But, you know. It actually can also be very emotionally freeing, too, to just start the process of getting rid of it and see what happens.
Exactly. And I know you and I have chatted about this. I am a linear thinker. I'm also very creative, but I'm a very linear thinker, and I'm brutal about things. If I haven't used it or seen it or needed it in 2 years, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't keep it around.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't used to be like that. You know, I used to hang on to everything. I had, you know, was sentimental, and, I grew up and got over that, but... You know, it's not a bad thing, but for the way I work, I can't have a lot of junk around. I just can't.
Right.
It's just too distracting. I do have a question. I wrote this down because we keep kind of touching on the topic of documents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned thesis and you mentioned tax documents. And I guess my question is, and we may have to do some research into this, but in this day and age of technology, what about scanning these documents and storing them either on a disk or on... You know, there's all kinds of places online where you can store these types of things.
Mm-hmm.
Scan them and get rid of them. Is that possible? Or would that be a good, you know, a good way to retain them without actually retaining the bulk, you know, the paper?
Absolutely.
I'm just wondering how that would work for tax documents.
Yeah, absolutely. You can do that. But you know what I find is that people really don't need to keep as much documents as they think that they do.
Mm-hmm.
So if they have some sort of a system where they're able to file all of their tax documents in a way that it's you know, makes logical sense so that you could just very easily collect it when it comes time to tax time, and then you could just, you know, put it away in a box and archive it. Tax, when you get done with your taxes, those do not need to be sitting in your immediate area. You can just put them in a box and file them away. Now, unless you're somebody that's just like, oh my gosh, you know, 10, 20 different receipts every single day, you know, then you're going
to
have an abundance of paperwork. What's
you
that?
Maybe not be out in public as much.
Yeah, but, you know, honestly, I mean, I have not run into a business yet where the, actually the person I'm dealing with right now that might, I might have my first person, but I have not run into a person yet who, of all the documents that they're keeping, that they really need to keep all of them. I would say most of the time, like, at least 50% of that stuff can actually go.
Yeah, I would think so. Like, if you're buying plants for your yard, you probably don't need that as a business write-off.
No, probably not.
Yeah. Listen, I know you had said that you have an offer from my listeners.
I do.
Share.
Okay, well, what I like to do with my clients, I do two different types of services. I have either a hands-on organizing, or I can do a consulting, whether that be by phone, email, or both. Most of my clients do need more of a hands-on organizing because they're just simply stuck, and they just need somebody to come in there and just start the process. Because they're just too overwhelmed to do it on their own. However, obviously, the people who are not located here in San Diego, a phone consulting or email consulting actually would work for them as well. And what that is going to be is we are going to do an assessment of your space. Let's just talk about your office as an example. Mm-hmm. And you tell me what's going on in your office, maybe send me some pictures of your office, and then what I do is I give you a plan, and I say, okay, this is what you need to do, and I do it as step-by-step, broken down to as much detail as I most possibly can, and give it to you so that you can do it on your own. However, the most important factor about all this is accountability. So rather than me just giving you a plan, which, you know, you could say, well, I could just go to any book, and I could read it, and I could come up with a plan myself. Sure, you can, but probably that book is still sitting on your shelf 2 years ago that you meant to
underneath do. Underneath your coffee cup.
Yeah, exactly. And you're not going to do it, okay, unless you have somebody sitting there telling, you know, so the accountability factor is a very big key about that. So what I do is I set up a package of about 4 hours with my clients where I do an assessment with them and I give them step-by-step plan, and then we also do check-in with them. And normally this package is $300, but to your listeners, if they purchase this package before the end of April, I'm offering it 50% off.
Wow.
So $150 can get them a plan and somebody to actually keep them focused on actually making that plan happen.
I think that's the most important part right there.
It really is. It really is. You know, I have my clients, I really seem to seep very deep into the unconscious of the people that I deal with, because I can't tell you how many times the people, for one, even knowing that I'm a professional organizer seems to make an impact on people. It inspires and motivates them to actually take action. It's just a bizarre phenomenon to me. But I actually have people who will say, I woke up this morning or I went into my office. We'll use this lady with the desk with the 20-year stuff in there. She actually says to me, I go to my desk, and every time I'm at my desk, I think of you. And I think of you telling me, okay, just go ahead and put it back now. Just put it back. And it works. And I don't know what I'm doing, but something about
well,
me
if
is
it's
actually
working. Yeah, if they're actually hearing you and something that you were saying like that is resonating so firmly with them, that's a wonderful thing. So
it's a
keep
wonderful
it up.
Thing.
Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I wish I knew exactly what it was. You know, I used to be a personal trainer, and I used to be a real big proponent about shoulders, keeping your shoulders, your posture straight. And I would literally yell at my clients across the gym, and they loved it. You know, most people would go like, oh, my God, who is she? What does she think she's doing? I'd see my clients, if their posture wasn't straight, I'd yell, Susie!
Right.
Straight up!
And it's so important. I mean, it really is, because
and
even
is.
When you're working at a desk all the time, as I do, and I take breaks. I go to the gym in the morning. Oftentimes, I'll go in the evening again with my husband. But I bought a Wii Fit not too long ago because I realized that, and my posture has always been very, very straight, all of a sudden I realized that my shoulders hurt all the time because I was hunching over my keyboard.
Right.
Because
right.
we were working. So and I knew it, so I need your voice in my head going,
you need my voice. Yeah, well, I'm sure if you heard me calling your name across the gym, you would, and I would have the same. And after a while,
I'm slumping now. I'm sitting on my spine, which is the worst thing you can do.
Oh, that's not good. You know, have you ever thought about, I'm actually thinking about doing the same thing. Have you ever thought about getting a stability ball?
Actually, I have. One of my clients, well, I have several clients that are big into the fitness industry,
mm-hmm.
and she said, just go get one of those and get rid of your chair and sit on
yeah.
that. I will
yeah.
fall through the window. I'm not the most graceful person, and you will hear, I'll be talking with a client, and you'll hear a crunch when I go through the window. So I'm a little bit, I'm a little bit afraid of that.
I understand. I understand. But let me just tell you, like, 10 seconds of the advantage doing that, because when you're sitting on a stability ball, you're forced to use muscles
right.
in your body that you would not normally have to use if you're sitting on a chair. Therefore, it would strengthen those muscles, and it gives you a better ability to balance yourself and create stability within your body. And because it's not like a hard surface, it gives you a little bit more flexibility as you're sitting,
right.
then it's not going to be that, you know, pounding feeling on your bones. So that's my whole thing about stability. So
I will definitely try that. And the second thing that it would do for me, it would keep the cat out from underneath me. Because every time, every time I stand up, and picture this, I stand up and Clotilde, which is one of our cats, I don't know how she knows that she can be clean across the house, and I can turn around and she's curled up on my chair. Now, she can't do that on a stability ball, can she?
That's right.
Oh, right.
She could dig her claws into it, too. She might be passive-aggressive and, like, pop the damn thing.
You know what? You just made a point. She could. She could very well. But one of my clients and a friend of mine also sent me a yoga video last year, and I love it. So I'm doing a lot of that. But I have found that I'm really not treating my shoulders well, and I'm wondering if that's why that's manifesting all of a sudden. So apparently I've got some mental clutter going on.
Mm-hmm. I'm carrying the weight of your world. What the belief is that could be going on inside of you is you're carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders.
Well, yeah, I'm a woman.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're all Atlas.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, I'm rereading that again for the third time in my life.
Oh, is that right?
Okay.
I've never actually read it.
Oh, read it. You
is
must.
It good?
No, I don't know that it's good. It'll scare the bejesus out of you.
Oh, God, I don't need to be afraid anymore.
No. Need to be very afraid. I read it when I was very young, and then I read it again, you know, probably 10 years later, and I'm reading it now again. It's just, I think it should be mandatory reading, but that's just me. So I know we can't, we're getting way far afield.
I know,
we do. So I know we can't cover everything in this really brief radio show, but
mm-hmm.
we're talking about systems, and we keep getting away from that, so I am not
yeah.
going to interrupt you anymore. Can you share some systems and processes
yeah.
for decluttering, particularly a home office space, because
yeah.
we're speaking right now to entrepreneurs and people who will become entrepreneurs. And I had a lady yesterday say, where can I go to find this information? Is there a book?
Mm.
Oh, my gosh. You know, there's so much information, but
kind
there's no
yeah.
one source that you can point to, and I think you're a tremendous resource. So
thank you.
Help these people. Yeah.
Call out the bat signal. Miss Organized will be there. Okay, let me just give
yeah.
you a few little nuggets here that hopefully will help. First of all, when it comes to paperwork, you have to know that paperwork falls into one of two categories. One is action, and the other is reference. So action would be tickets. You get mailed tickets for a concert that you're going to be attending.
Mm-hmm.
You want to put that into a system or some place where once you actually go to the concert, you could just easily go to it, retrieve the tickets, and then take it to the concert. Now, let's say you want to save those tickets as memorabilia once you actually get done with them.
Mm-hmm.
Now those tickets turn into a reference. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
So that's why people scrapbook.
Right. Oh, the scrapbooking. Oh, boy.
Oh,
I can't tell you how many times I get calls from clients. Whenever I hear the word scrapbooking, I'm just like, boy. There always seems to be a major the people who scrapbook, I'm not saying scrapbooking is bad by no means, but the people who scrapbook always seem to have major clutter issues. It's really interesting to me.
Yeah.
Anyways, we can go off on that topic for the next hour. So
that might be another show.
Back to systems, yeah, scrapbooking,
yeah.
Clutter Release 101.
Clutter Release 101, I love it.
So your paperwork is going to fall into action or reference. And I always get people also to think about when you're filing a piece of paper, don't file it for what it is. File it for what it's for. So as an example, let's say that you have an invoice for your clients that you an invoice that you generated. Okay, that invoice, instead of filing it maybe under invoices, you're actually going to maybe file it with your taxes. because it's an invoice, but what are you using it for? You're using it for taxes, marketing materials, instead of filing it under a general marketing. Okay, well, are you actually going to do something with it? Is there actually a brochure that you're seeing a advertisement for a, what are those three, I don't even know what they're called, but the leaflets or whatever, and you want to
trifold brochure.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes. So you see an advertisement come across your desk that says, you can make these beautiful trifold, glossy trifolds, and you're thinking, yeah, I want to actually do that. Okay, that's the key word. I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Then that becomes an action item. If you stick it in just the general marketing folder, you're never going to take action on it because you're never even going to remember it's there.
Right, it's gone.
Right. So what I do is I tell my clients, let's just talk about action here more specifically. So what I do is I usually set up an action system for my clients. Now, believe it or not, the paperwork that comes across your desk almost always will fit into the same 15 to 20 categories. So you have events that you want to go to, maybe if you're a mom, schoolwork. You have bills that need to be paid. You have... oh, gosh, what are some other things? Let me look at my action system right now. You have, client to-dos, things that you have to do for your clients. Mm-hmm. So what I usually do is I get, like, an open file crate that you can hang hanging file folders in with index tabs across the top.
I have that.
And
I have it right behind my desk. Yes, ma'am.
Perfect. See, you're perfect.
So I can turn around and grab any file, the files that I use the most often. And being a virtual assistant and a web developer, you wouldn't think that I ever touch paper. I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to be able to grab it immediately. I can't be thumbing through things. I just don't have time.
Right,
so I did that. I think I got that idea from your website, and I got one of those.
Oh.
It's a box that's sitting on top of the filing cabinet, and I can just grab the whole little box by the two handles and bring it over.
Yep.
Very nifty.
So here's an action plan that your listeners can do right away. This is what I tell them to do. Go to your desk. Get a bunch of plastic sorting bins. Now, you can actually go to my website, and this will walk you through my little system that I use when I organize clients. It's called the Space System, SPACE.
Okay, tell people where your web – sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Tell people where your website is.
My website is www.miss-organized.com. So it's miss-organized.com. And I actually have a video on there about the five-step approach that I use to organize a client, the space principle. So sort, purge, assign an area, containerize, and equalize. We won't go into that too much. You can actually watch the video, and that will explain it. That's a system that I got from Julie Morgenstern, who's actually one of the leading authorities in professional organizing. She's on Oprah all the time. And it's a really great, simple system to use. So this is what I recommend. Go to my website, watch the video. It will show you how to declutter your space. Let's just talk about a desk right now. So then when you go to your desk, go get a bunch of plastic sorting bins. You can get them at Target, really, really inexpensive. Or you can get banker's boxes at Staples. And then I want you to go through your paperwork and look at each piece of paper and go, okay, this is marketing related. Boom, goes in one section. This is client information, goes in another section. This is related to taxes. Boom, goes in another section. So sort everything out. And then when you go through this step, you're going to see, okay, these are things that I just need to file away, and these are things that I actually need to take action on. So when you come up with the categories of everything you need to take action on, by the time you clear off your desk, especially if you're a piler, you're going to see that you have about 20 different categories. And you know what? Your clients can actually, your listeners can actually email me, and I'd be more than happy to give them categories that more than likely they're paperwork is going to fall into. So if they want to start the process, but they have no idea what these categories are going to be, they're more than welcome to email me, and my email is on my website, and just say, hey, can you just get me started with the categories that I will be looking for? I'd be happy to email that to them.
Okay.
And once they get these categories, then go ahead and set up that action system. Again, open file crate with hanging file folders, little plastic tabs across them, or even just to start sticky notes on them, just, you know, before you commit to your actual index label, and put those papers in there. And that way, if you have anything that comes up that you have to take action on, then you immediately know where to go. The benefit of this is it keeps piles from happening on your desk. When piles happen on your desk, you're going to be totally overwhelmed. You're not going to know where to start. You're going to feel every single day like, oh, my God, I just don't know. And here's the second part about making this system work. you've got, if it's an action item, you need to take that to do, and you need to put it in another system. So now whether you use Outlook, whether you use a pad of paper, whether you use your BlackBerry, whatever system you use to keep track of your to-dos, you need to put, I have a outline that I need to do, and these are all the notes that I'm going to be using for my outline. You have to say, okay, review notes. I'm going to do that on April 6th and put that on your calendar. Because if you don't do that, then that little action system I'm telling you about is just going to become another dumping ground. And that's why I totally disagree with the idea of inbox and outbox. So a lot of people have the like little stackable trays, and they just say, put that there and I'm going to deal with it.
Yeah, and you can dust it in about a week because nothing happened.
Yeah. No, those are just very, very, very ineffective. So that's one thing that you can do. And again, you know, if your clients want to do the package with me where we do, you know, the phone consulting and email consulting, I would be happy to work with them to set this up for themselves.
Okay.
So let's talk about a couple other systems that they can actually use. A contact database, huge, and very important. If you are running a successful business, you do not want to be writing down notes. You don't want to be writing down names and numbers of potential clients or clients on pieces of paper that you're never going to be able to find.
No.
Get an Outlook.
I have a client that actually has her old Rolodex. You know, the old manual, you have to spin it, Rolodex.
Oh,
I said, you're kidding, right? Seriously, are you kidding me? She said, no, I'm still using this. And you know what I did with mine? I donated it to Goodwill. I did. I took all the pertinent information out of it, and I gave it away. I have absolutely no use for that Rolodex.
Oh, my gosh. Those are, ugh. Yeah, those are not good. But, you know, again, here's the thing. If it's working for her, then that's great. You know, but if it's
not
working,
for her.
It's
no.
not, yeah, for a chance.
No.
So the one that I really, really love is I love Outlook. Outlook is a very effective contact database. In fact, they actually have, I believe it's called Business Manager for Outlook. And so you can actually connect when you send an email to somebody, it actually keeps that information tied to their contact information in Outlook. So you could always go back and say, you know what, did I talk to that person? You could set it up so that reminders, of I need to follow up with this person in a week. You could keep notes on this person. It's just a very comprehensive and simple program you can use for contact database. And there's others, but that's the one that I use and I recommend. Two other things, time management. Okay, so if you want a way to be able to keep track of your to-dos and appointments, the three systems I really love, again, is Outlook and the BlackBerry. Okay, I actually take my personal to-dos and I put them on my BlackBerry. If I'm talking to somebody and they say, you know what, will you please send me an email about immediately go into my BlackBerry and I put it in there, because if I have to remember that with all the other things I have to remember, there's going to be a problem. So I recommend BlackBerry. Franklin Planners are awesome. I love Franklin Planners. Just go onto the Franklin Planner website, and there's just so many different options you can use. I wish I can go more into how wonderful they are, but
Franklin Covey, right? The Franklin Covey plan, right?
So, and a money management program. This is extremely important for business owners. Money management programs can be things like Microsoft Money, QuickBooks, or Quicken. And let me tell you something I just discovered about Quicken that I'm actually, as soon as we get off the phone, I'm going to start working on it. I'm so excited about it. I'm such a dork. But it's Quicken Online. And what it actually does is it goes right into your bank account, and it can actually pull all of the transactions and put it into the money management program, and it actually will categorize it for you. And the best part about it is that you can do this mobily. So you could set up a budget, and this is where I really need the help, is you say, okay, I only am giving myself $300 this month to spend on groceries, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you go and you say you're at Vons and you spend $100 on groceries. You can actually go into Quicken on your BlackBerry, on your phone, and you could put in that you spent $100 and can say, okay, well, now you only have $200 left. So now it's a way for you to keep track of your budget as you go, instead of waiting to go home, put in the receipts, you know, the report. It's just a fascinating program.
I am so glad you shared that, because that is a, particularly these days, that is an incredible tool. So thank you.
Oh, incredible.
I didn't know that. And I use that with BlackBerry Franklin, but I did not know that about Quicken Online. So thank you very much.
It's amazing. And in fact, Quicken Online is free. It's absolutely free.
All right. That's even better yet.
Amazing. I'm just so excited about this thing. And then the very last tip that I will offer to your listeners is, if you have the funds to do it, hire an assistant. Hire a virtual assistant. You know, let's see, we set up your system to be able to, you know, all this beautiful system to have your paperwork filed, but you just hate filing, then hire somebody for $10 an hour to come in once a week to file your paperwork for half hour or an hour. Trust me, the money will be well spent. It will take it off your mind. You'll be able to maintain your system. Just get a virtual assistant to hire things that are taking away from your time to be able to do what you do best, which is bring in the money for your business, go out there and get the clients, and service your clients. Let an assistant handle all the rest.
Right. Nobody can do your thinking for you. You are the one that has to be the creative partner in your business, even if it's just you. So if you're just completely overwhelmed with all of this stuff, you're not being creative. You're too worn out. You get totally worn out. One of the questions that I had in the chat room, let's see, let me go back to this. Let me put her on the line.
Okay.
Hello, this is Denise and Tracy. Do you have a question for Tracy?
I do. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hi, Tracy. It's Judy, the journaling genius. How are you?
Oh, Judy, how are you?
Hi, Judy.
Oh, I love this firecracker. How are you, Judy?
I'm awesome. It's been great listening to you. I had a question about your offer.
Yeah.
So you said it was $150, and then there was follow-up and accountability, but how long does that follow-up last?
Till Christmas. I'm lying. Do not pay attention to me.
I mean, is it the end of the plan, and what if I'm a bad client? And you could just explain that, I'd appreciate it.
Well, yeah. Typically what I will do, first of all, I'm a very flexible person. So, you know, I'm one of those people that, like, I might say that it's only going to be during the actual four hours that we set it up. But, you know, gosh, I just want to help, you know, and I just, whatever it takes to get the person to be able to have their place organized in the way that, you know, makes them feel comfortable. But typically what I would do is we set up the 4 hours, and let's say on Saturday you decide that you're going to do your organizing, you know, 4 hours on your own on that day. And then we decide, okay, maybe on that day I'm going to check in with you, you know, maybe 10 minutes beforehand, 10 minutes after, you know, and see if you're on track with what you're doing. I would say probably – you know, obviously, I'm not going to have somebody, you know, following up with them for the rest of their life, but I would say probably it would last until at least a couple months after the package is over, just to make sure that they're on track with everything.
Okay, yeah, I must have missed the four-hour thing. No, that's brilliant. I actually have not worked with you, Tracy, but I've worked with organizers, that I use, and sometimes you just need a professional.
Yeah.
And it really is the accountability. And the other thing is that, you know, most people that I talk to when I say, oh, you need to get an organizer, they all say they're afraid that they're going to have to throw things out that they want to keep.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing that people need, is a reassurance that no organizer will force you to get rid of something if you really feel like you need to keep it.
Right. And that's very, very true.
It does inspire you to get rid of a lot of stuff that you thought you absolutely had to have for the rest of your life.
Right. And that's very and thank you so much for sharing that concern, because that is actually a very valid concern. And one of the things that I always tell my clients is, here's how I work. I'm not going to force you to get rid of anything, okay? But what I will do is facilitate the process of bringing the awareness to you about your relationship with your stuff and just getting you to question if that makes sense. Now, you might look at it. I've had clients do this where they look at this object and they're like, well, I'm going to use it for blah, 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 blah. I give them a couple of questions. Okay, now let's think about this a little bit differently. And they're just so strong-willed about this. Okay, they're not ready. They're not ready for that. And that's okay. But then we might look at another object. Okay, well, let's look at this, blah, blah, blah. But I tell you what, and again, I don't know what it is about me, but somehow or another, all I got to do is spend maybe 20, 30 minutes with a client just kind of going through their little tantrum phase where they're just, you know, putting their little, you know, hands stomping their feet and just kind of, I'm not going to do this. All right, go ahead and pout. But then after about a half hour, I swear to you, it happens every time that they start looking at their stuff differently. And next thing you know, they're going so fast, I can't even keep up with them getting rid of their stuff. I've only had in all of my clients that I've ever dealt with, I would say maybe two people, maybe three people, that they were just absolutely adamant about not letting go. But for the most part, every single person I've dealt with, not only did they let it go, but they let it go on their own terms, and they could not believe that they were actually able to do it.
That's great. Well, you're obviously a total inspiration, because just listening to this, I put my headset on and started cleaning my office.
Oh! Yay! So, mission accomplished.
Yeah. Good job, Tracy.
Thanks, Judy. Miss you.
I have a question. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I do. Tracy, when you're dealing with people, particularly, and I keep going back to people who are now going to be entering the workforce on their own, you know, there are a lot of people right now that just simply are not willing or able to go out and look for another job if they've been laid off or quit or whatever. And they really do want to start out on their own. But one of the things that I notice about people, particularly clutterers, and I've been around a lot of them, and I'll be honest with you, it's almost a physical thing for me. I just about have to leave a cluttered space.
Yeah.
I just almost can't handle it at a psychic level. So
right.
What my question would be, do you have a process where you can go to the client and say, have you ever followed yourself around during the course of a day and actually determine how much time you're wasting just thinking through crap? I mean, do they actually come to a realization of how many hours or half hours or minutes a day they lose just picking up that coffee cup and moving something?
That's a good point.
I mean, to me, that is just astonishing waste of time. Drives me crazy. I mean, I've seen people that just have spent so much time searching for something that I'm hopping from one foot to another going, I've got to go, I have to get out of here.
That's true.
And I understand that's a characteristic from me that's not a nice one, but that's just the way it is. It's a character flaw, I admit it. But I do observe people just, to me, it's a horrendous time waste.
Horrendous. It really
so
is. In fact,
how do you cope
a little
with
statistic.
That?
Well, a little statistic I'll share with you, first of all, is the average executive spends 6 weeks a year looking for stuff.
Ah.
Gosh.
6 weeks a year! Does that just make you sick?
Like a sabbatical.
And if you're paying yourself, which I do, oh, my God. How awful is that? I mean, the executive is being paid by somebody else, so they're basically cheating their employer, my
book. That's true.
But if you're doing that to yourself, how stupid is that?
I have a question. How do you deal with it? I had an employee when I was in corporate who she swore she could find anything on her desk.
Yeah.
Nobody else could. So do you have clients like that, and how do you deal with that?
All the time. It's called denial. All the time. And here's what I say about that is that that's true, that they can find it.
Eventually.
But what is the stress that they're putting themselves under in order to be able to do that? And here's the thing is people are so set in their ways, and they've gotten so comfortable with doing things the way that they say that they can do it, they don't stop to ever realize that maybe there's a better way. Maybe there's a more efficient way. And not only that, but you have to think about everybody else around you.
Yeah.
You know, what is it doing to everybody else around you? Could somebody, if you, like, say you're, you know, a worker and you broke your leg and you're out from work for a week. Okay, yeah, maybe you would have been able to find the paperwork on your desk very easily. But if somebody had to come in and do your job, could they have done it?
Yeah.
You know, that's a really effective system. It's not only where it makes sense to you, but if somebody else can come in and work your system.
Right.
For you as well. And that's a really hard one, and that just comes down to stubbornness. And, you know, I've actually... What's that?
I hope she doesn't listen to this interview. She'll know who she is.
Cross your arms, lady. Come on. Come on. You know who you are. I've actually had a client the other day who, you know, she got so sick and tired of her paperwork being all over the place that she developed a filing system for herself that was based on alphabetical filing, which is just, oh, my God, might as well file it in miscellaneous. And so I told her.
Just get a big cardboard box and toss it all in, shove it in the closet.
Oh, yeah, and label it A. No. So what I one of the things that I do with my clients right from the beginning is I will say to them, are you open to looking at a different way to doing this? Now, if I get an answer that's no, And I've had this before, that I have to just organize them but still keep their current system. Because if I do anything else besides their current system, it's going to whack them out. And I've had that happen before. Where if I say, are you open to a different system? They say yes. And then I say, okay, I want you to recognize that the system you're having right now, even though you think it works for you, there's something about it that's not working. Because if you look to your right, you see you have a couch there, you've got paperwork all over it. So if you had, if this system was actually working for you, you would look and see that there's no paperwork right there. So something is not working. You have to be willing to accept that. Now, the next step is that when I do this system for you, you have to realize that there's going to be, you're going to have to switch your thinking a little bit. And I attempt to set up systems that don't require people to have to do this drastic change of their thinking, because then that's going to cause failure as well. So I attempt to set up something so it still kind of goes in line with the way that they think, but at the same time is a more effective system, if that makes any sense. So, yeah, back to your question, Judy, it's a stubbornness, and it's also, and, you know, when we go back to the psychology of clutter, when you have people who, like especially in work environments, where they've got clutter all over the place, all their paperwork, what they are unconsciously communicating to the outside world is they are saying to them, look at me. Look how busy,
so busy.
I am.
You're so busy, right?
I am so busy. If you put any more paperwork on my desk, I'm just going to jump off a bridge. I'm going to go postal. You cannot put anything else. But what they're really saying, that's the surface communication that's going on. But really the dialogue that's going on at a deeper level is what they're really saying to you is, if you put anything else on me, I am so overwhelmed that probably what's going to happen is I'm not going to either be able to do it or I'm not going to do it well, and I'm going to feel like a failure. Yeah. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you in a physical way that I'm not able to handle any more work. I'm going to make you feel bad about giving me any work just so I can protect myself, protect my ego from being put in a position of failing.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that is really interesting. Now, I'm just, you know, mean-minded enough, I wouldn't feel bad, but I wouldn't, I'm telling you. This is why I have to work for myself.
Heartless.
Logical and linear. I prefer logical and linear to heartless, just so you know. But you know, you're absolutely right. Now, Judy and I have been in that situation. I mean, anybody who has worked in an office environment or a corporate environment has seen that person that has files on the floor and they're on the credenza, and you know, you have to shift them out of a chair to sit down to have a meeting. So, and it's really ridiculous. And not only is it ridiculous for that person, it causes problems for the rest of the office when they have to go on a hunt for a document that is not findable, and that breeds resentment. So then you have a work environment that becomes totally toxic.
Totally.
So it just doesn't make sense. And in the words of Dr. Phil, who I don't watch, but I have seen, how's that working for you? I mean, that's,
how's that working,
you know, that's
for
one
you?
Of the few things that he, you know, and I don't watch much TV, but I heard him say that one day, stopped me in my tracks. I went, well, I'll be darned. How smart is that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How's that working for you? Well, it's not. Okay, do something about it.
Right.
So I would think that given what's going on right now in the world, I think Tracy is going to become a huge resource for a lot of people.
I think her idea is brilliant, to be able to do it without having to be in people's homes, because it's really leveraging the time, and it really
absolutely
be able to help way more people.
Thank you.
And particularly if people can, you know, if they have a video camera and they can video their space and open up the closets, open up the drawers, open up everything and show it to you. Without embarrassment, without judgment.
Without judgment. You know, let me tell you another reason why that's effective is because what it does is it creates a sense of empowerment. Look what I did. I just decluttered my own environment. I did this on my own. And then this becomes a sense of, like, pride. And then you set up your systems and you did it, there's something about it where you just want to maintain it because look what I did. Look what I did. And I didn't do it because anybody's forcing me to do it. I did it because I wanted to do it. And look what I was able to do. And it gives people confidence knowing that they can. And that's one of the problems also when people get so heavily cluttered, they just lose confidence. They lose the confidence in themselves that they can even do it. And they start labeling themselves. Oh, I'm just lazy.
Oh,
I'm just whatever it is that they say to themselves that is the reason why they are cluttered. No, it does have has nothing to do with that. That's just what you're, you know, the easiest answer for yourself. But there's really a lot more going on below the surface. So if you can actually do the space on your own, when I have my clients, like the lady with the desk with the 20-year stuff, I got her set up. I started the process. We took everything out of the desk and we put it into boxes. I didn't declutter anything. I just sorted it out for her to look through the stuff. And then the little stuff that I knew she needed to have put back right away so she could just start working right away, I went ahead and set up little systems for her. But she did a good majority of the work as far as like going through all the boxes and decluttering it. And it was so cathartic for her because as she did it, she was just like, oh my God. One, not only, I can't believe I've lived like this. I can't believe that I let it get that bad. How could that have happened? And so she starts becoming aware. And then as she's going through stuff, the weight starts to get lifted off her shoulders. And then she gets more confident. Okay, I wasn't able to get rid of this. I've been looking at it for 20 years. I wasn't able to get rid of it. I just got rid of it. What else can I do? Mm-hmm. What else can I get rid of? And then you build more and more confidence as you get rid of stuff that you didn't think you could, and the next thing you know, your environment is organized. It's really fascinating.
The other thing I've heard, I don't know if you can verify this, Tracy, is that a lot of times people find money.
Oh, yes.
Checks that haven't been cashed and, you know, in piles of paper and stuff. So, you know, that could almost, like, pay for your services.
And you know what? And I've had that happen before. And as a matter of fact, I was at a client's house yesterday. He opened up a book and found $200 in cash.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. And here's a really funny story. I had a woman who had, she didn't find the money, but she, you know, just kind of had it kind of not in a place where it was easily accessible. But she had one of those, like, Tijuana banks, you know, the big Winnie the Pooh ceramic Tijuana banks. And she says, you know what? I know there's a lot of money in here, so why don't you take this thing to Coinstar and, you know, whatever is in there, just go ahead and keep it. I'll just use that to pay you. Okay, well, I took this thing there, and I swear to you, it was like Vegas in there because there was it was $600 worth of coins. I was at the Coinstar for 30 minutes. I was out there for so long that it attracted attention. People started coming over to me, and you're ding, 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 you know, for a half hour, and people came over to me, and they're like, what is going on? Who is this person? So then I decided to start playing with these people, right? So I went into Lime when I turned in the little receipt. I'm like, oh, I got to do something about this. This is funny. So I go into Lime, and they're like, well, who's all that money for? I was like, well, you know, it's a celebrity. I really can't, you know, who that is, but, you know, confidentiality.
That is wicked.
And that's, we continued on the conversation. I let it slip. I said, oh, you know what? Yeah, J-Lo. So I made them think that the ceramic Winnie the Pooh bank belonged to J-Lo.
Well, you know, she does have very poor taste, so it's entirely fine.
Oh.
Sorry about that.
Ouch.
Are we still recording?
Yeah.
You
don't get me in trouble.
We are.
You know, I'm going to be on the
Come
red
on.
Carpet someday.
No,
J-Lo's going to be girlfriend.
Anyway,
so yes, I've had that happen.
You know, I have a very quick question before we sign off, too.
Yeah.
One of the things that I have noticed with people who are terribly cluttered, and, you know, whether it's an office environment or it's a personal friend, their cars are just awful. So do you, in your practice, your services, do you ever tackle the cars? I mean,
you know
some
what?
Of these cars, I won't get in them. It's like, oh, no, 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 no. No, I am
I
not
know.
Sitting
Chris,
on last year's cheeseburger. No. So, I mean,
you
and
know
I
what's
noticed
fascinating?
That they carry it over, so it's crazy.
I do not. In fact, the only time I've ever been asked to work on somebody's car was literally only about 2 months ago. That was the first time anybody has ever asked me to work on their car. So maybe I should think about that. In fact, I was watching Oprah the other day, and they have Peter Walsh on there who's doing this whole tackling
Clutter America thing.
Yeah, and he's great. I'm actually reading one of his books right now, and I just love the way he talks, and he's got some really great strategies. And they actually brought somebody who wrote into the show about their clutter. They actually took this family's car to the Oprah show, put it on the stage, and then, you know, had them showcase it, and then, you know, then while the show was going on behind the scenes, they decluttered it. But this thing was horrific. I mean, she had like two or three kids, and they all had to like cram themselves in there while there's just these mounds
Mm-mm.
of just junk around them. And I'm just like,
that's
I
almost
cannot
child
believe.
Abuse. literally. I mean, that's
she couldn't
me.
Get all her kids in the car. I saw it.
She couldn't, yeah, she was going to have to drop them on the top. But you know what, Denise, you really did hit the nail on the head, because I can't tell you how many times I have gone into a person's home and that has serious clutter issues. I'm not talking about, you know, just like, you know, need some help but not serious. I'm talking serious clutter issues, and there's almost always books on abuse, almost always.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real connection to it.
Well, that's just not right. But I would think that in your practice, you could extend that to say, listen, you know, I know you have to be in your car for business at some point, even if you're working out of a home office. Judy travels on business. I do every now and then. You have to have systems in your car as well.
Yeah.
You need a place for your laptop. You need to have your briefcase if you carry one. You may need, you know, one of these boxes that we were talking about with the file tabs in your car. If you're a salesperson, you may need to carry, you know, brochures or sales items with you, and you can't just open up the lift gate on the back of your car and chuck it in.
Yep.
And
true.
I see it. I'll be driving along and see somebody getting ready to go into an office, and they're pawing through all the garbage in the back of their car.
Yep.
Like, well, that's nice. I hope you're not going to be late for your appointment.
Yeah, I have a really small car, but I keep my products and things in bins in the boot.
As do I, in
the
boot. You have a Jaguar. But I do
it's
the
a really
same.
Small boot, but I can't. Yeah, you know, you have to keep it organized.
Right.
Yeah,
I have
do.
Bins in the back of my car for groceries. You know, I mean, I have the whole little Mercedes system going on back there, and some's for groceries, some's for work, and some's for the cat when he takes a drive with me. It's just, that's just the way it is.
Oh, yeah, I remember you talking about the cat.
My cat goes for a ride with me every day. But
I remember that.
He does. He does.
Oh, that's
but,
good
But, you know, I would think that that would be something that, it's an extension of the office, if you will.
Yeah, you're right.
So I would be very curious, you know, when we talk again, how that works out.
Well, I will put that out there. It's not really something I've ever really focused on, but I certainly will. And just to give your listeners a little tip about that, what Peter Walsh was saying is one of the keys to, probably the key for keeping your car organized, is you just have to get into the habit of emptying. How do I say that word?
Emptying.
Thank you.
It's a thousand things.
Getting it out. Let's say.
There you
getting
go.
It out. Getting the stuff out of your car on a daily basis. You just have to develop a system for that. I actually did set up once before for a client where she would literally just take a big plastic bin of stuff a clear plastic bin, empty, and then she would just every day get into the habit of, I totally forgot about this until now, went into her car, and everything that was in her car that belonged in her home or in her garage went into the plastic bin, and it was literally just taking the plastic bin and just going and putting it all back in the right spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And
now,
you know,
one thing that I've noticed about Americans these days, and probably in other countries as well, is that people eat in their cars, which I think is an abomination for a lot of reasons. Number one, I don't want to eat in my car and have trash and garbage and ants in my car, and I live in the deep south, and ants will get in your car.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, you're not really sitting at home around the dining room table with your family and eating a proper meal. So there, you know, there's that component of it. But I find that eating in your car is one of the quickest ways to just completely trash mm-hmm. your environment.
Totally.
So, you know, I'm wondering if you could break people or suggest to them that maybe they not eat in their car. That might be a very good first step to just saying, look, we're going to declutter your environment and, you know, get out and enjoy your meal somewhere and don't eat it while you're driving.
Right.
And then
right.
throw the rest
and
on the floorboard.
Yeah. That makes sense on some level, but it's what I find with clients is that there would have to be some sort of a transition step. So getting somebody who doesn't who eats in their car and is used to that, and all of a sudden saying like you shouldn't do that, that's probably on some level going to create some sort of a rebellion.
Resentment, huh?
Yeah. And so what I would do is I would just say, okay, well, if you're going to eat in your car, let's see what we can do to at least work with it for right now to at least keep this space clean while you're doing that. Mm-hmm. And then maybe after a while when it starts to get clean, then maybe it might start to have a different – you might have a different mindset and say, you know what, I really like my car being so clean, and I'm really kind of sick of seeing this trash bag in here. So you know what, maybe I'll just start doing blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So it's got to be a process, you know, rather than going from, just like I said with the mindset, rather than going from I can't to I can, there's mm-hmm. got to be a transition, some sort of a transition phrase that you can use for yourself to move you from I can't to right. I can.
Right. Well, the transition for me would be to pay $200 to have somebody detail it. Yeah, and then I would say, you know, I think I'll just keep it clean now. I don't want to have to fall over.
Yeah, money's great.
I don't
want to
have a desiccated French fry underneath my gas kettle or salt, you know, all over the place. That would, you know, that might do it. If you had to pay,
that may
you
do it.
Pain,
that may work for you. You know, I have to admit that I just went into my car yesterday, and it's one little area that I always forget to check, and I don't know how long it's been since I've checked it, but the little pocket behind the car, I saw something sticking out of there. I was like, oh, well, let me go in there and see what's going on in there. Oh, my God. I mean, my daughter stuffed so much stuff down there, including an orange peel. Like, it was, like, moldy.
Ew.
I was like, oh, my God. I didn't even think about checking in this place or crying out loud. So, got to love that little redhead.
I found a can of olives not too long ago.
What's that?
I found a can of olives in the back, underneath
the
back.
Oh, no.
You know when I bought those olives? Thanksgiving of last year. Good thing I didn't eat them. They were rolling around in my car.
That's just gross.
My
car open.
In the garage, like, they found $20 that I remember I put it in my pocket when I was going to an event, and I couldn't find it when I got there. It had obviously fallen below the seat or something. They gave it back to me when I picked up my car.
Oh, nice. Oh, that was good of them that they did that and didn't take it.
Yeah,
wow.
Yes. Well, ladies, this has been a tremendous show, and we always get so much information from Tracy. And Tracy, thank you so much for being on the show. You're always just a wealth of information, and my listeners love it. So, Judy, do you have any more questions?
No. What was your website again?
My website is www.miss-organized.com. So it's MISS-organized.com.
Good. I want to go see that video.
Cool
yeah,
video.
Me too. And what is, I've seen it actually, but I need to revisit it. And what was the offer again, Tracy?
Okay, so I am offering your listeners my package, which is a phone consulting and email package so that they can organize their space on their own, but have me set up a plan for them and also hold them accountable to the process. It's a 4-hour package that I would normally charge $300 for, but if they're willing to purchase the package, until the end of April, I'm offering 50% off, so $150.
That is wonderful.
That's amazing.
Thank you
value.
So much. Yeah, it is. And yeah, my listeners are going to appreciate that a lot. In fact, if you can send me a link to that, I will send out a newsletter about it.
Wonderful.
Because I think it's very, very important right now for people when they're starting their new business, start as you mean to go on. Don't go, well, I'm going to take care of this later. Take care of it now. It will
take care of it now.
So much easier.
Because it will get harder later.
It really will. And Mary Kay, you know, Mary Kay, the Pink Lady, she made, I read her book many, many years ago. I'm one of those, I have 3,000 books, I admit to it.
But,
and I'm not giving them up, so don't ask.
I'm
tell you right now.
Ask you to.
No.
What gets me is she's counted them.
I know.
No,
how do you actually know how? That's what's more fascinating
I
to me.
I didn't count
them. You have 3,000.
Oh.
My husband did when we moved, and you should have heard him. 1, 2, 5. It was really ugly.
Oh, God.
So he has promised me or threatened the next time we move, he's not moving a book. He's not touching any more boxes of books.
Okay,
but
hubby.
I do. I have over 3,000 books, and I actually bought 5 more yesterday.
So, yeah, I have an Amazon.com habit. I need a 12-step program for
it. There you go. There you go. See, I have a Zappos habit. So, you know, you have to have these release valves. But I do have all of these books, and I love having these books. And what I find is that because I have, and it's not cluttered. Look, I'll just tell you straight up, mine are alphabetized by author. I'm that nuts. But
I love it.
Mine are in sections. So I have the fiction in one place, and then I have the business books in one place, and then I have
mine are by author. And I know authors that write under different pseudonyms, so they're all grouped together as well.
That's awesome. You're like the Felix Unger of books.
I'm afraid so. I am afraid I am, but I had a point, and I lost it. What was that about?
I'm having 3,000 books.
3,000 books.
No, it was
Felix
before
Hunger.
That. Anyway, whatever it was, you guys have made me lose
my
mind.
I'm sure it was brilliant.
It was. It was absolutely fascinating. But I have to go now.
Okay.
So anyway, thank you, Tracy, so much for being here. And Judy, I always love having you on the show. So the show will be available in about an hour for download, and I hope everybody listens to it and goes to Tracy's website and takes full advantage of this really remarkable offer. And I look forward to seeing everybody next Friday for our next online entrepreneur interview. Have a great weekend. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Bye, Tracy.
Bye, Judy.